Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and I'm very pleased to say, joining me in person, in the flesh, not 3 feet away from me for the first time this season, is Jeff Rimebold. And that's why we're recording this podcast on Thursday, because good things come to people who wait. Jeff, welcome back to the UK. Good to have you.
It's awesome to be back here, my friend. And especially to sit across the table from you.
Lots of people have been asking on Twitter, and I'm going to be careful how I ask this because you have a boiling hot cup of coffee over there, which you'll probably pour straight on my head. But talk us through the Grey Cup game, and how did things go for the Hamilton Tiger Cats last week?
Well, we came up short. We had a chance at the end, an amazing play with a minute 30 left to go. We stop them. They have to punt to us. Brandon Banks, our punt returner, who's had a tremendous run, had put four in the end zone in four games, and two in the end zone the previous week against Montreal in the division finals. Fields a ball that goes 95 yards for a touchdown that should have won the game. Would have been one of the defining moments of Grey Cup history. And you look out on the field and there's an orange flag on the field, and we got called for an illegal block. And I'm going to tell you something, Neil. It's really, really heartbreaking for those kids to have played that well and fought that hard. We were 9-point underdogs, and had won the game, and was taken away by a penalty. And it's amazing. My phone blew up the next day with guys from, you know, coaches that I know, and even an official called me, sent me a text and said it was just not a call that you make at that point.
Well, I was going to ask you that, because sometimes you always see that you want to let the players play the game. Did the penalty affect the play? Was it anything to do with the play, or should it have just been left?
No, and what would have happened in a National Football League game certainly would have been the officials would have conferenced, and would have, the first question would have been asked, would have been, you know, did it affect the play? Was it a clear foul, and did it affect the play? And if it wasn't, they would have picked up the flag. Not the case for us, and sadly, you know, you don't get very many chances to win a championship in your life, and that was the 102nd Grey Cup, and our kids, like I said, just fought like crazy, and to have the thing won and then have it taken away was really, really tough. And you know, everybody's, I think, just still kind of dealing with the pain of it all.
Yeah. Let's turn our attention to the NFL then, because there's no putting your feet up and resting on a beach for you. Now we get you for the rest of the season on Sky Sports. You're excited now. The games matter the most now at the end of the season. Every game is huge.
You know, people had asked about when I was going to come back over, and I kid that my common response was when the games are the biggest. And now the games are really getting big. The playoff races are starting to firm up. And it's the best time of the year to be a fan, because every game means so much. We just went through our playoff run. Now the NFL teams are beginning their playoff runs. And, you know, right now it's adrenaline and coffee. There's good coffee we're drinking. But it's going to be fun to go through this all the way through the Super Bowl now with the UK fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to getting in the studio with you, getting you on that touchscreen and do some teaching of the fans. I know that's something you're looking forward to doing, the X's and O's, because – you know, we'll have a nice mix then. I think we'll have all the highlights from around the league, but we can really dissect some of the plays as well.
Well, that's, to me, that is the I've done this now, I don't know how many years we've done this, I think since 2003 or 4. And the fan appreciation for the technical aspects of the game has really grown in the UK. Not only has fandom grown in the UK, the number of NFL fans has grown, but the sophistication of the fans, and I really sense that they want to understand the game better. And the technology that we have at Sky now is fantastic. So I'm looking forward to you and I getting up on that touchscreen and getting some work done.
Definitely. I'm looking forward to just asking the questions. You can do all the telestrating. I'm happy leaving you with the X's and O's. You mentioned the fans in the UK. So fans are now able to renew their season tickets for the 2015 International Series games at Wembley Stadium. The season ticket renewal window opened at 10 o'clock today, Thursday, December the 4th. If you renew your tickets, you'll have been given, if you're a season ticket holder from last year, you're given a code. You can go in, you can choose where you sit in the stadium, you can buy even more tickets. And then there's a general season ticket sale opening at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, December the 16th. So for more details on all of that, go to nfluk.com. We're going to take a look at some news from around the NFL, as we always do. Pause and talk about some of the bigger topics in the NFL. We'll make our picks for week 14, and we will answer your questions in the mailbag. And Jeff, let's start with a couple of bits of news that relate to our early game on Sky Sports on Sunday, 5:30. We're on air, and it's the Indianapolis Colts at the Cleveland Browns. Brian Hoyer remains the starter in Cleveland, so we can talk about that in a second. You know, whether they stick or twist, they decided to stick as they're in the middle of the playoff run. Just saw this quote from Johnny Manziel, which said, "Just being a competitor, there's disappointment. I showed last week I can play a little bit." As a coach, do you like the fact that he's disappointed he's not on the field? Or do you want him to be a good soldier who doesn't say anything about this situation?
No, I think you can live. That comment to me is benign enough that you can say, hey, you know, the guy obviously is a competitor. Mm. That's why he became a Heisman Trophy winner. That's why he's done all the things that he's done through his high school, college, and now into the NFL, his career. You want competitive players. Mm. Now, it is, you cross a line a little bit sometimes when you voice that competitiveness, but I don't think that comment's particularly bad. I did see, the thing that amazed me as we're talking about this, yesterday, LeBron James has come out and said Johnny Manziel is ready to be a starter in the National Football League, and he's pushing, you know, he's like the mayor of Cleveland, but he's pushing the Browns publicly to put Manziel in, because apparently there's a friendship that's developed between LeBron and Manziel, and the reporter asked LeBron, what makes him say that he thinks Manziel's ready? He goes, well, because I talked to him. What are the Browns ought to do? Bring him in as a quarterback consultant. What are they talking in the nightclub? And it's like, he's ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Pettine, we talked quite a bit about Mike Pettine on this podcast this year. He seems strong-willed coach, a disciplined coach. And I think he's resisted. There must be some tremendous, I was going to say external pressure. There's probably quite a bit of internal pressure to play Johnny Manziel as well, but he's resisted that. But there is this media, you know, and I do feel like I'm being a grumpy old, you know, voice, a lone voice saying, well, hang on a minute, calm down. But we get tweets into Sky Sports saying, you know, why is Brian Hoyer still playing when there's an elite quarterback waiting behind him? Well, we don't know he's elite yet. And last week, Albert Breer of the NFL Network described Johnny Manziel's 80-yard drive against the Bills as spine tingling. Well, I don't, you know, I think spine tingling drives win you Super Bowls. So, but we can't wait to get excited and anoint this guy. And I think maybe everyone needs to pause and take a breath.
Yeah, I mean, it's about the body of work. And you know, we're not party to everything that the Browns coaches are party to. How much of the offense does he really understand?
Well, I was going to ask you that. That must be a part of it. This is on, because Hoyer's played up and down the last couple of weeks, so they've not seen enough from Johnny Manziel. And do they test them on terms of how much they know the playbook? Would they be seeing stuff in practice that makes them?
Well, I think really it's the practice situation. And where most of these young guys struggle, Neil, is in the reads, the blitz pickups, where the hot receivers are, all of those things, which are the really, you know, the really more difficult things to learn. Now, when you take a guy like Johnny, who's had such tremendous athletic ability, he's really played beyond his mind, if I can say that, in that he's so good physically. He was so good in college physically. He could do things that were wrong and still get away with it.
Right.
Well, now you're in the National Football League where there are no average athletes playing anymore. And if you do things that are wrong, it costs your football team. So I'm sure in practice, if he was ready to play, if he was truly ready to play, I'm sure Mike would have him in the lineup. Mm. And you know, I you got to trust the coaches who see him every day in practice, are with him in the meeting room. They watch his preparation. His time is coming.
Yeah.
But, you know, Pettine's trying to get in the playoffs. They're trying to win.
Yeah. We talked about this on Sky Sports last week when we knew that Hoyer had struggled. And I said straight away, and I know I'm quite overly cautious on some of these things, but I said you stick with Brian Hoyer because you are in the middle of a playoff run. You are 7-5. And while he's been up and down, he produced the throws late against New Orleans to get the win, late against Atlanta to get the win. What would you have done? Where do you stand on this?
Well, the thing that would concern me about Hoyer's performance in the last, you know, three or four games is you're starting to see interceptions.
Yeah.
You're starting to see him turn the ball over. Yeah. And that was always one of his fortes, that he didn't turn the ball over. So I would say that as I look at this, that Hoyer will get the start, and as long as he can keep them positive, not turn the ball over, make enough plays. He doesn't have to make all the plays, but he has to make enough plays because they're very good on defense.
Yeah.
And then I think they'll stay with Hoyer. But if Hoyer struggles early and he throws a couple picks, then don't be surprised if you don't see Mazz out.
That leash is a bit shorter now, Jeff.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, that's not a bad thing either, because you always want to have a situation with your backup quarterback where when he comes in the game, it's an emotional lift for your football team. It's not, oh, man, look, now we got to, you know, oh, boy, he's in here now.
Yeah.
Right? It's, hey, Johnny can get us to the promised land. And I think he's starting to create that that atmosphere in the Browns huddle.
Tell us about that, Jeff, from a coaching point of view, because we see it quite often around the NFL. Backup quarterback comes in during a game, lights a spark, and sometimes then if that backup quarterback starts – the following week, when other teams have had a chance to look and see what he's about, that performance level is not at the same height. So have you seen that over your years, where a backup comes in, plays well in a game, but then doesn't play well the following week?
And that's usually a product of one thing, Neil, that the defense spends all of their repetitions, and you only get a very few. Like, say, for example, in practice, you have 3 days that you work during the week, and you'll get 20, maybe 24 practice snaps against that opposing offense. So, you know, you're talking about less than 100 reps all week long. And because you only have limited reps, you can't, you know, base your reps on the backup quarterback. You got to go against what you think the starter does and where how he plays, and you build your game plan around defeating him, not the backup.
Yeah.
Then the backup comes in, and now you've got a different guy in there who does different things. And that's why they can have those flash in the pan one game wonders, and then the next week after the coordinators have had a chance to get them on tape and they prepare for them, they struggle now the second time.
This is the big game for Trent Richardson, of course, who started out with the Browns and then was traded for a first round pick, a 2014 first round pick that Cleveland used on Johnny Manziel. Richardson spoke this week and said, the Browns gave up on me. I'm going into this game like it's my last one. There's a few Colts fans who would hope that would be the case. I mean, look at the numbers, Jeff. 25 games in Indy. He's averaged 36 rushing yards per game, 3 yards a carry. He's never had a 100-yard rushing day. I mean, is this guy a spent force? I mean, there's talent there, isn't there?
Well, there was when he came out of college. You sure saw it as a college player. But the NFL's a different game. And he just has not had the production as an NFL player. And certainly, you know, if you're the GM of the Colts, you want to see something from the guy, particularly in this game, because it's against the team that you gave up a first round draft choice to get him. But, you know, to me, that has been a trade that will, for years to come, has the potential to really help the Browns and, you know, hurt the Colts, frankly. That was a bad, bad trade.
Ryan Grigson is going to have some explaining to do about that trade for a number of years, because we've got some questions in the mailbag about the devaluing of the running back position. And then you go and give up a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, that's become kind of the common thinking pattern now, that you don't use a first-round draft choice on a running back. Mm. Now, to give up one for a guy that really was not very productive even in Cleveland is really a reach. And Grigson, you know, sometimes these kinds of trades define your career, and certainly this is one that he wants to have Richardson at some point show that he was worth giving up a first round draft choice for.
As a coach, do you, if a player faces his old team, do you try and tap into that, or do you have to try and keep the emotion out of it? Because clearly Richardson is going to be fired up.
I think there's a tendency to use that as motivational fuel for your football team. Say, for example, Richardson, I don't know Richardson. I'm not in their locker room, but I'm just giving you a hypothetical situation. If Richardson is a popular guy in the locker room, if he's a guy that the other players enjoy being around and playing with, and then you can use that as, hey, you know, here's an opportunity for all of us to help Trent show, you know, that this has been a good trade for us, and kind of rally around him a little bit. And certainly you can tell by his comments, he's going to be ready to play when they tee it up on Sunday.
We're not going to look back too much at week 13, because we are now much closer than normal to week 14 in the NFL. But tale of two quarterbacks did want to touch on, Jeff. First of all, I thought Aaron Rodgers again was sensational against the New England Patriots. And there's quite a rut that Colin Kaepernick is in now for the 49ers. Looking now, that Seattle defense has woken up the last 2 weeks, and, you know, they look the real deal again. But, you know, two sides of the quarterback equation we saw last week.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Rodgers right now is it's almost uncanny how well he is playing. Mm. He puts the ball in such small windows. He makes such great
decisions.
The accuracy
is incredible, isn't it?
And you know, from a lot of different throwing angles, his foot position sometimes is not ideal. He throws on the run. He throws with a low elbow. He throws with a high elbow. He throws from all kinds of launch points. And the common thread is that the ball's always right there. And what amazing chemistry he's developed with Jordy Nelson.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, that to me is, you know, Jordy Nelson scored a touchdown in every home game this year. It's consistency as well. But you talk about trying to move quarterbacks off their spot sometimes. Rodgers might actually be better throwing. Normally, there's a little drop-off, right, if you're throwing on the move. He might actually be better throwing on the move.
You know what? I agree with you. I think if you're going to compete against him, where you want to keep him is inside the pocket.
Yeah.
When he gets out of the pocket, that really makes him dangerous because he has the whole field to work. And the tendency for the defenders is to watch him and not watch the receivers when he gets out of the pocket. And he's deadly when that happens.
We could all live with watching the Patriots and Packers again in the Super Bowl.
I tell you what, man, what a great game to watch. And hey, here's to the Packers defense. You know,
yeah, that was difference, wasn't it?
They have played better, you know, and again, if Dom can keep them healthy and keep them playing that way, they're certainly one of those teams that will be in the discussion as we get closer to the playoffs.
What about Kaepernick? Have you not seen enough progress this year?
You know, to me, it's just he's kind of leveled off in his career. Mm. That he hasn't taken that step that we all thought that he was capable of, particularly when it comes to his decision-making and his throwing.
Yeah.
And he's still a tremendous athlete. There's no question about that. But I think, as you'd mentioned, the defensive coordinators, they study that tape, boy, and they really understand what a guy does and what he doesn't do well, what he likes and what he doesn't like. And if you have a challenge with something, whether it's saturation zone coverage or it's, you know, blitzing from you blitz him to his throwing hand and make him roll away from his throwing hand, which is what we did to him when he was a college player. And he still has trouble moving to his left and throwing to when he's on the run.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? As athletic as he is, and when he gets in full stride with that long striding run downfield, you watch him try and shuffle to the left. He couldn't look more uncomfortable.
Well, and you know what? And like I said, when there's something that you have a problem with, you can guarantee you're going to get
a large
dose of it on Sunday afternoon.
The New York Giants last week, they lost their seventh game in a row, and this one really hurt. They were up by 21 on the road against Jacksonville, and I thought the Jags were in trouble. When Rashad Jennings scored in the second quarter, about three or four guys bounced off him, kind of half-hearted tackles. And I was like, oh boy, the Jags are mailing this game in and you're about to fall to 1-11. They come back and win it. And now the Giants, that's seven in a row, as I said. There's talk about Tom Coughlin and his future. And we've had this even in years when Coughlin has gone to the Super Bowl. But I think this is a big week for them because they're playing Tennessee. If he lost back-to-back games to Jacksonville and Tennessee, I don't know how he gets saved. But there's a guy who's won 100 games, 101 games in New York. He's won two Super Bowls. Tell me, Jeff, about, because it has been mentioned before, he's 68 years old, the oldest head coach in the NFL. Should that even come into the equation?
Well, I think it comes into the equation, because, again, you're the oldest coach in the NFL. Mm. But I had an opportunity to visit the Giants last spring and spent an afternoon with Coach Coughlin. And one of the things that you recognize about him when you're around him for about 2 minutes is the fire in those Irish eyes that he has is just as it's just as hot as it was when he was a young head coach in Jacksonville. I think his passion for the game is still there. I think his passion for those players is still there. He loves those players, and I think you know, it's going to be tough if this is his last season. I talked to a front office guy from the Giants who called me right before our Grey Cup game to wish us good luck, and he was doing advanced scouting, you know, for the Giants. And I said, how's it going for Coach? And he said, you know, everybody's pulling so hard for him because we all want him to go out of whenever his last game is or his last season is, we want him to go out a winner. And that's what's killing us the worst is we're just not producing for the guy because he's doing a great job of coaching this football team. But the reality of it is, Neil, and you know, this is a what have you done for me lately business. Mm. It's not based upon what you did or how many Super Bowls you won in the past. That'll only get you additional time. Eventually, you have to produce. And for the Giants, they have not. This has been a disastrous season again, where they, you know, now seven game losing streak.
It would be nice to see a coach or a couple of coaches have losing seasons and, you know, come back, because it almost feels like if you have a disastrous season, that's it, the coach goes. Whereas there was a time late 90s where Bill Cowher had a couple of really bad years at Pittsburgh, but they stuck with him and then he won a Super Bowl after that. It does seem to be now bad season equals firing a lot of the time.
Well, you look, take Jimmy Johnson, for example. I mean, he comes into the Cowboys out of the University of Miami, and I think they won one or two games that first year, and they were a horrible football team. And Jerry could have pulled the plug on him right there, but they stuck with him, and the next year they started to show some progress, and then next thing you know, they win two Super Bowls. So, you know, but the reality of our business is now that, you know, it's so results-oriented, and there's so much media coverage, there's so much talk radio, there's so much going on the internet all the time. It's harder and harder and harder for GMs and presidents and owners to stick with their guys. There are a number of coaches, Neil, around the league right now that are in, you know, you talk about the hot seat. There's some really hot seats in Atlanta. You know, again, I worry about Gus in Jacksonville. Coach Coughlin, you talked about him. Coach Trestman in Chicago. Yep. There's a number of guys that are, you know, going to these next weeks. We talk about the games being the biggest. Well, how big are these games for those guys?
You mentioned coaches there with losing records on the hot seat. Is there one with a winning record on the hot seat? I'm thinking San Francisco, Jim Harbaugh. They're 7-5. Again, we get this talk time and time again. He may get traded. I mean, we don't hear about coaches being traded very often, but there's an ongoing story here. And the 49ers, Jeff, have become, I don't want to say a soap opera, but we've had the Ahmad Brooks thing. We've had Trent Baalke's daughter on Twitter, Jed York on Twitter after the Thanksgiving. These are all things you never associated with the 49ers.
No, and particularly the Bill Walsh 49ers. Right. You know, they were always above. They were exempt from all that. They were always above all that. Well, the reality of it is they have turned into a bit of a soap opera. And, you know, off-season things with guys and guns and all kinds of stuff, and you know, does the head coach want to be here? Is the head coach, can the head coach get along with the president? All that kind of stuff that swirls around their football team all the time is nothing but a distraction. And if you're in Arizona and you're in Seattle, you love it because it takes the focus away from where the focus needs to be in San Francisco, and that's winning football games.
I guess it comes back to that, doesn't it? You could be the biggest pain in the backside, but if you win and you go to the Super Bowl, or you go to the NFC Championship game, then nobody really cares about it. You might be considered quirky, but if you start losing or a few more losses slip in.
Well, I tell you what, nobody's ever going to vote Bill Belichick Mr. Congeniality
Are you kidding? I thought he was.
But they'll vote him Coach of the Year.
Yeah,
I mean, and so, you know, it is. It's about winning. I mean, it's about winning. There's some great guys that you know, being a good guy, you know, doesn't get you much. Yogi Berra said, good guys finish last. So, I mean, it's like right now in this league, and you look around the league and you think about, let's say the NFC South, for example, Neil. If the Saints don't win that league, that division, there's a chance that the team that does win it, whether it's Ron Rivera in Carolina or Mike Smith in Atlanta, that head coach could win the division and get fired.
Get fired, yeah. Stranger things have happened in the NFL. I have quite a bit of response on Twitter about Tom Coughlin. It does seem that Giants fans are divided. You know, there's a lot that still want him to stay and over, if there's a rebuild, for him to oversee it. But I guess we'll wait and see what happens there. Let's get into our Week 14 games then, Jeff, and do our picks for the week. We'll start with the Dallas Cowboys at the Chicago Bears.
This is a monstrous game, right? And I mean, it is, to me, it's a huge game for Mark in Chicago, because they have to win. They have to show improvement down the stretch. You know, you look at the Bears over the 2 years that Mark's been there, and the things that jump out at you are, number one, the defense has killed them. They've given up 50 points two weeks in a row, first time in the history of the National Football League. And last year, they gave up more points than any Bears defense in the history of the Chicago Bears, which is a long, long history. Then on top of it, Cutler, who looked like early on in the Trestman era, was really starting to come into his four and really be one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. His play has kind of leveled off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you don't see the improvement in the Bears offense that you anticipated. Everybody thought going in with Jeffrey and all the players that they had, that this would be a team that would, even if they had to score 40 to win 40-39, that they could do that.
Yeah.
But they're not scoring as effectively as they should. So this is a big one for Coach Trask. I'm pulling for him because he's a good guy, and I'd like to see him, you know, finish this thing off in Chicago. And then you look at the Cowboys. They gotta believe that they still have a chance, but they've got to play well.
Looking at Cutler, we're 9 seasons into his NFL career now. He leads the NFL with 20 turnovers, 14 interceptions, 6 fumbles. Is there a point in a player's career where, yeah, a bit like Bill Parcells used to say, you are what your record says you are? And after a while, I mean, Cutler is a strong-armed, exciting quarterback, but you will always get mistakes. Or can players be fixed 9 or 10 years into their career?
Well, I know this from working for Mark. No coach that I've ever been around, and I'm talking about, you can talk about Coach Vermeil, you can talk about June Jones, you can talk about all of the great ones I've been around, Jerry Glanville, all of them. No coach have I ever worked for placed a greater emphasis on taking care of the football than Mark Trestman. I mean,
must be driving him mad.
First day at training camp, he gets up in front of the whole team and he talks about how to protect the football and how important the football is, and defensively how important it is that you get it, and offensively you cannot give it away. And for those numbers to be there after 2 years with Jay, that really concerns me that he's not going to change. Mm. And we're 9 years in. We're not 9 months in. Right. We're 9 years into a career, and you still see those numbers. And I believe, like you said, that the numbers really tell you who you are. It's not about what you say you are. It's what you do in this business. And right now he's not playing at that elite level, which he has the physical ability to play at. I mean, he can make all the throws.
Oh, yeah,
he's got
the
athleticism.
Yeah.
He's got it all. But it just somehow it's not getting done.
I'm going to go Dallas. What about you?
I'm going to take Chicago.
Okay. Chicago on Thursday night. That's on Sky Sports. You can watch that one. Let's move on to Sunday's then. Pittsburgh Steelers at the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know what we get with these teams.
I mean, I think one thing you're going to get is it's going to be a physical.
Yeah.
With those two football teams, these two teams don't like each other. Yeah. This is an old rivalry game, and both teams are physical. So, but like you say, there was a period in the season where you looked at Roethlisberger's work for 3 straight weeks and you go, wow.
Yeah, red hot.
And then all of a sudden he's kind of not, I won't say tailed off, but he's not playing at that level certainly. And Andy Dalton is, again, he's showing more and more of the Andy Dalton playoff version than the regular season.
Well, I wrote earlier this week, Jeff, about that on NFLUK.com. Somebody asked me, would I be concerned about the 3 interceptions last week against the Buccaneers? And I said, at the end of the day, it comes down to trust. And I would ask Bengals fans, like, you're about to go into the playoffs. Do you really trust him to produce win after win after win? And I doubt if there are many that say, that's my guy, that's it.
Well, think about it this way. If you're a fan, right, and you're invested in your football team, you're invested in your Bengals. If you're a player on the Bengals, and now you know that the clock is ticking, in your career, and you don't have a lot of trips left to the playoffs, do you trust him? Do you trust him to get you through those, critical games? Mm. And, his history is that he won't. Now, I think this is a big game for them. I like the Bengals at home.
Yeah.
They seem to really play well at home. And again, I think the Steelers are not a great football team, so I'm going to take Cincinnati.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bengals as well, purely on that home field thing as well. I think Le'Veon Bell could have a big game, but Bengals at home are tough to beat. We've talked a lot about the Colts and the Browns. Who are you going to pick in that one? I like Indianapolis still. I think Andrew Luck's going to produce enough points that whether it's Hoyer or Manziel, you struggle to keep pace.
I agree with you. I think that they will win it, but they'll win it offensively. They're not going to win it with their defense. Their defense has got to pick it up if they're going to make a run in the playoffs.
All right, so that's the Colts and Browns. That's our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday. Let's move on to another game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Detroit Lions. The Bucs have lost a lot of close games this year, Jeff, but I guess that's part of being a good team, right? You win the close ones. You don't lose them.
Well, usually, Neil, when you lose a significant amount of close games in a season, what that tells you is you're just not good enough personnel-wise yet.
Right.
And I think, Lovey will continue to build that thing. You see sparks, you see little bits of glimmers of, you know, that with a good draft, with some free agents again in this offseason, that the Bucks can trend in the right direction. But right now, I think Detroit, you know, has a lot to play for still. Detroit is very, very good on defense. And you know, Stafford has had a, you know, in my mind, a much more consistent, better year. I think they've done a good job with him. Caldwell's done a good job with him up there.
Going to go Detroit in that one?
I'm going to take Detroit.
Yeah, I'm going to take Detroit as well. Interesting last week, Marvin Lewis of the Bengals in the game against the Buccaneers. The Bucs complete a pass into field goal range to kick the game-winning field goal. They had 12 men on the field. It was missed by the officials and by the replay guys, and it's inside the last minute of the game. Marvin Lewis, who's on the competition committee, he knows the rules, threw out the challenge flag, and you can't throw out the challenge flag. Throws out the challenge flag, loses a timeout as a result, but in the process of losing the timeout and the result, manages to tell the officials, you might want to take a look at how many men they had on the field. They look at it, and then the play gets overturned and the Bucks don't get the chance to kick the field goal.
That's high-level coaching right there.
Yeah, you do what it takes to win, right?
I'm a little embittered about officials right now, but come on, man. Can you count to 12?
Yeah, exactly. The Houston Texans at the Jacksonville Jaguars. I guess Jacksonville, good win last week. They've had some recent success against Houston, but I can't look past J.J. Watt against that offensive line. Or against that secondary, actually. What do you think about
it? What a story. I mean, what an incredible, incredible player. I like Houston in this one. I just think you saw, again, even though they came back and beat the Giants last week, there are still some holes in the Jags. And, you know, I'm a big Gus fan, and I'm pulling for him hard. He's got a long way to go in that reclamation project he's doing.
J.J. Watt summed up his season last week when he sacked Jake Locker, recovered the fumble, and then three plays later caught the touchdown pass. I mean, set it up himself.
All he didn't do was kick the extra point. We got to get his
guys. And he's got, I think it's extra
point. I thought this guy was special.
Yeah,
right?
No. I think he's got to kick an extra point and throw a touchdown pass, and he's got everything that you'd need to have. This is a good game, actually. The Baltimore Ravens at the Miami Dolphins. When you look at Miami's running, they've got three more home games, and this is the toughest one. They've got Minnesota and the Jets. This is a tough one, but I don't know how well Miami match up to Baltimore. Baltimore have got a strong offensive line, so does that negate Miami's defensive line? I'm trying to get all the excuses in early.
Well, I tell you what, if you're the Dolphins, you got to wonder about your run defense a little bit.
Yeah, last two weeks, I mean, over 200 yards.
Yeah, and the Jets just pounded them physically in the first half. Now, the thing about the Ravens have what the Jets don't have, and that's some weapons outside. Steve Smith and Flacco can get the ball to those receivers outside. You know, they were able to beat the Jets because the Jets are so one-dimensional. They're just so deficient at receiver and their ability to throw the football. Baltimore can do that much better than the Jets can, so I'm going to take Baltimore in this one.
Sadly, I'm going to agree. I think Baltimore.
Well, that's a tough one for
to
say.
It didn't hurt. That hurt. But the New York Jets at the Minnesota Vikings. The Jets on Monday night were so embarrassed of their quarterback, they wouldn't have him run out of the tunnel. They announced every other offensive starter and not Geno Smith. Geno said he wanted to clap his teammates onto the field.
I think they're probably trying to save Geno from getting
some boo birds.
Not only boo birds, there might be projectiles from that crazy Jet faithful, but it's such a tough situation. You know, Marty Morningwig, who's the coordinator there, the offensive coordinator, is a friend of mine, and I spoke with him actually yesterday, and you just hear in his voice how it's so tough. You trade for Percy Harvin.
Yeah, where is he?
And, well, you know, the thing about it is Percy's never been a number one.
No.
He's never been
no.
a one. He's always been a complimentary piece.
Yeah, move him around. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what he can do extremely well. But to say he's going to be your number one guy, well, you know, that's a stretch for him. And Decker's always been a complimentary piece. So you got two guys that have always been, you know, the second or third guy, and now they're trying to be number one guys, and you got a quarterback situation that is just a mess. And, you know, sadly, I think Rex is going to pay the price.
Well, so do I, Jeff, but that is sad because I think he's still one of the best man motivators in the NFL. I think he could still be one of the very best coaches in the NFL, and he's paying the price for they've ignored the quarterback position for far too long, whether it's Sanchez, Geno Smith with a bit of Michael Vick thrown in the middle. And Rex's defenses have always needed really good cornerbacks. They have none.
Well, they've gotten rid of great ones,
And so how's he supposed to keep his job?
Well, that's one of the things that's so difficult, because he doesn't make those personnel decisions. Yeah. I'm sure he has some say in it, but for example, you take Darrell Revis, who's the best corner in the National Football League, and you're in a defensive structure that has to have, as you said, has to have corner play. Well, you say he's too expensive, and you go and bring in D. Milliner, and if you know D. Milliner's even college history, he struggled with injuries. Now he's hurt. That's been his history.
Yeah.
But so you're trying to play a defense that requires great corners, and you don't have any. You don't have any at all. Mm. And still, he finds a way to keep people out of the end zone. And like you say, it's unbelievably tough in that media market when it's not going well for you. They're vicious. Mm. And so he's been able to keep the focus in the room. I talk about the locker room.
Yeah.
In the room on trying to find a way to win the game and staying together and fighting. And, you know, they play so hard. But, you know, you just see that they just don't have the players to win enough football games at the critical positions. Corner on defense, wide receiver, and playmakers on offense and quarterback. They're just not good enough.
Given all that, I'm tempted to pick them. At Minnesota. I mean, I don't know. I think I could see them keeping it close.
It's an outdoor game at Minnesota. I really think that's a tall order, and I'll take Minnesota.
I've always had a soft spot for the Jets, as people will know, so I'm going to go Jets. In Geno we trust. Yeah, I know. Boy, I'm behind you, so I need to catch up with it. The Carolina Panthers at the New Orleans Saints. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to take the Saints.
Absolutely. Have to take the Saints. Yeah. And you know, again, the Carolina has just really, really fallen
Cam's
off.
Cam's another one. Maybe talk about regression or leveling off.
Yeah, and again, now he's getting in the point now where he's going to start costing them an awful lot of money against the cap.
Yeah.
And you got to look at that and say, are we getting value for dollar? Because he eats up so much cap space, it keeps you from being able to bring in other guys. Luke Kuechly has been an unbelievably consistent, great player on defense for him. But where has the rest of the defense gone that was so dominant just last year? Mm.
Missing Greg Hardy, maybe that's one.
That's part of it, and I think and I think Steve Smith, letting Steve Smith go, and I understand what Gettleman did when he did it, because you're looking at him and say he's only got maybe one, two more years left. We want to get younger, we want to get more athletic, you know. And Kelvin Benjamin has a chance to be a fantastic receiver in this league, but I think what you lost with Steve Smith was more than just a receiver. You lost a leader, and you lost a, you know, one of those guys that was so competitive, he elevated everybody around him.
Yeah, because he's fiery and he makes
– exactly.
If he winds people up in practice, they practice harder and
exactly.
So on and so on. The New York Giants at the Tennessee Titans, I mean, it talks about the pressure on Coughlin. Titans have scored a few more points recently with Zach Mettenberger at quarterback, but I think the Giants are still a better team than them. What do you think?
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think the Giants overall, as you look at their entire roster, Tennessee is still, you know, probably 2 years away from being where they need to be. And that quarterback situation is another one that's really shaky.
St. Louis Rams at the Washington Redskins. I think last week we saw that RG3 isn't the only problem in Washington. 6 touchdowns they gave up over 30 yards. I mean, there was Kobe Fleener, and I love Kobe as a person. He's a great guy. But when you let Kobe Fleener run 73 yards away from you, he's not the most fleet-footed of tight ends. You have a problem in your secondary.
Yeah, I think there's, as you say, there's a number of problems in Washington, and they're going to have to really take stock, I think, and see where they're going to go, not only with RG3, but with their defensive structure and Jim Haslett. They've struggled the last couple of years on defense there. To me, you look at it and you say the St. Louis Rams. Well, will the real St. Louis Rams
please
sign in?
Show me some consistency. Yeah,
because one week you get a team that looks like they're a contender for the playoffs, and then next week you get a team that, you know, just struggles. So, I think St. Louis is going to win this football game, because I think, as you say, the Redskins have problems that are way deeper than who the quarterback's going to be.
Yeah, I'm going to go Rams as well. Rams over the last 7 weeks have alternated wins and losses. So just to back up your point there. The Kansas City Chiefs at the Arizona Cardinals. Last 3 games, 35 points for the Cardinals.
I think this is going to be a heck of a football game. Mm. I really think this is going to be a heck of a football game. That they match up extremely well. I think the Cardinals match up well with the Chiefs. That Cardinals defense has playmakers all over the place, and it'll be interesting to see how they defend Charles, because Charles to me is really the key. Yeah, and you know, whether the Cardinals can score enough points is going to be the issue, because that, you know, you look at what they're doing offensively, just the fact that they're scoring any points, you know, they've been just decimated with injuries. But I'm going to take, because it is in Arizona, I'm going to take the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you on that one. Pick the Cardinals at home, trying to fend off Seattle. They've only got one game lead over the Seahawks now in the NFC West. They do play each other again before the end of the season. The Buffalo Bills against the Denver Broncos. This could be an interesting matchup in that Buffalo lead the NFL in sacks. Denver have given up the fewest sacks, and that's a lot of that's Peyton Manning and how quickly he gets the ball out. But I guess when you're the Bills and you depend on all of those sacks and defense, it only takes probably two quick Denver touchdowns and you're out of reach of Kyle Orton. That's the concern.
That is a concern, because for the Bills to have success, they've got to run the ball, and you know, they've got to get C.J. Spiller going. Mm. Sammy Watkins is just practiced yesterday for the first time, so. You know, he's a big, big playmaker for them. And Orton's not a quarterback that functions well from behind. He's not a guy that's going to stand in the pocket and throw it 55 times to beat you. The interesting thing to me in this game is going to be just what you talked about, Jerry Hughes and that defensive line, which is maybe as good as there is in the National Football League, particularly at getting after the passer, getting after Peyton at home.
Yeah.
But I really still believe that Denver has too many weapons for the Bills.
Yeah, I'm going to go Denver as well. Denver hit the reset button after they lost to the Rams, because they in that game they had 50-odd passes and about 10 runs. And the last 2 weeks, it's as if they've said, we can't do that. And C.J. Anderson has come out and had over 150 the last 2 weeks.
Well, that's what you want to have heading into the playoffs, because you have to, in the playoffs you got to run the ball some. You got particularly to close out games.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that the Denver probably did take stock a little bit. The coordinator sat down and said, hey, you know, we can't be this one dimensional. As great a quarterback as we have, we've got to be able to run the football and take a little pressure off the offensive line.
The San Francisco 49ers at the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders last week took their commitment to excellence to St. Louis and lost by 52. You're not even laughing at that, are you? Can you?
No.
No, I can see it. See, I wouldn't know that. Normally, if you're sat in Canada, I wouldn't know how you're feeling about that comment.
You
but
saw
I know
my
now,
head drop
you?
As minute you said that.
I mean, this is 49ers game, surely. I mean, I can't see how the Raiders win this one.
You know, it's an emotional game because it's the Battle of the Bay. And it's two organizations that don't like each other.
Yep.
And they're located about 30 miles from one another. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, as sad as it is to me, when you look at a team that has, when I was growing up as a kid, that was the franchise. Most successful pro sport organization in, you know, at that time. And how far they have fallen. And the only thing that resembles the Raiders to me is the uniforms. It's not everything the play else. On the field. No. Everything else is just really struggling. And I agree with you. I think this is a bounce-back game for San Francisco.
All right, our second game on Sky Sports. And you talk about games that matter the most. This is a huge one coming up. The Seattle Seahawks, who've got right back into form as well. 5-1 in their last six games against the Philadelphia Eagles. It's in Philadelphia where the Eagles have won 10 regular season games in a row at home. This could be a cracker, Jeff, this one.
I think this one has a chance to be really, really something special, because you're talking about Eagles offense. And did you see McCoy last week?
Yeah, I mean, he was good. He's special.
That's the shady we've been looking for. And now you talked about it earlier in the show that the Seattle defense is finding its teeth again. Mm. I mean, they are really starting to play at a high level. It's going to be, I think, I give the Eagles the edge. Even though I'm a Seahawk guy, I give the Eagles the edge because I know how hard it is to travel that far, to go across four time zones to play a game in weather, in a place that is a tough place to play. The fans are all over you. And I think that will be the deciding factor in the game. And I think it'll be a close game, but I'm going to give the Eagles a nod.
Yeah, I'm going to go Eagles as well for the reason I think, you know, talk about points. Seattle are still struggling to score points. I think some way, somehow, that Eagles team can get to 20, 21 points, and I think that might be enough.
Yeah, you know what? Through this thing, the one thing that's been really enjoyable for me to watch is Mark Sanchez have a little success because he was such a punching bag the last couple years with the Jets. And people forget that he had taken the Jets, you know, to an AFC championship game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is he good enough to win a Super Bowl with? I'm not saying that, but I'm telling you, I enjoy seeing a player come off the scrap heap like him and, you know, play better.
Yeah. Story of redemption. Certainly, he's trying to write a new chapter in his career. The New England Patriots at the San Diego Chargers. Patriots are 6-0, I think it is, at home this year, and they're 3-3 on the road. But I mean, Chargers are getting healthy, but I'd still fancy Tom Brady to get this one for me.
Interesting about Belichick and how he does things. They play in Green Bay, and instead of going back to Boston after the game, he takes them right
went straight out
to San Diego because the weather, the time difference, all the things we talked about. He wants his football team focused and prepared. Mm. And, you know, again, he's lucky that he works in an organization where Mr. Kraft makes those kinds of things possible because that's an expensive.
Right.
Expensive.
So it's just, yes, whatever you want.
Whatever you want, as long as you win.
Yeah.
And he doesn't ever stand in the way, as far as I can tell, of anything that Coach Belichick needs to put a winner on the field. And this is again, I think, a smart move to get out there early. It's always going to be for the players when they go to San Diego. It's a distraction because the beach, the weather, all that.
Yeah.
So get them out there early. Let them spend some time, play a little golf, do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
But then now you can nail it down and focus. And really, this is a big game for them, so I'm going to take New England.
All right, I'm going New England as well. The last game of the week is the Atlanta Falcons at the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football. I'm going to pick the Packers. I mean, there's no way the Falcons with that defense can slow Aaron Rodgers. And Jeff, I tweeted this earlier in the week. It's been more than 2 years since Aaron Rodgers threw an interception at home. December the 2nd, 2012, it was our old friend Harrison Smith.
That is amazing. That is an amazing statistic. It's not like he throws a ball 15 times a game. They air the ball out, and he is not anywhere close to any other quarterback in the league, in my opinion. Or I guess I should say, no other quarterback in the league is close to him.
He's the best in the business,
because of what he can do. The whole package. Yep. I mean, Andrew Luck's fantastic. Peyton Manning's fantastic. Tom Brady's fantastic. But this is a guy who can do all the things. He can make all the throws. He's accurate. He's tough. He's really – you watch teams try and blitz him, and he knows exactly where the free man is all the time, the one that they can't block, and he knows exactly where the hot receiver is all the time. And the ball's on him quickly. And, you know, and additionally, he's got that – it factor that all great quarterbacks have. You watch the team around him, how he here's a guy that early in the season can go – hey, just relax, right? Everybody thinks the sky's falling in Green Bay, and he goes, hey, just relax. And it becomes a mantra for the team. Yeah. That's the kind of leadership qualities.
Jeff, how can you watch Aaron Rodgers throw a 20-yard strike on the money, and then he puts his hands in that hand warmer. He walks down the field. He strolls down. He might be laughing at a defensive lineman who's tried to sack him. And then he goes up to the line of scrimmage, and it's the next play. How do some of these other guys make playing quarterback look so hard?
Well, you know, that's exactly right. He makes it look like he's out playing with his buddies
in a touch game,
you know? And that's what the great ones have, the ability. The game slows down for them. We always say in the coaching industry, the game's not too big for him. Well, the game's never too big for him. Mm. Whatever stage you put him on, the game's never too big.
All right, let's get into the mailbag. Take a couple of questions before Jeff gets hit by jet lag too hard. How are we doing? You all right?
I'm all right. Let's go.
You had that good coffee. This first question is from Johnny Morehouse, who says, can anyone explain the rules around non-tackling in practice? So, I mean, Johnny, in preseason, you're allowed only one padded practice per day now in training camp. This is where it gets difficult for teams because in the regular season, you're allowed 14 padded practices. That's it. And obviously, you know, there's 17 weeks of a regular season. 11 of those have to be in the first 11 weeks. You're only allowed one padded practice per week in the playoffs. So, Jeff, this is a player protection type of thing. And what do you do to simulate the tackling?
Well, you can never simulate it. That's one of the reasons why tackling typically goes – the tackling efficiency goes down over the course of a season because you can't take guys to the ground. And let me say this, Johnny, that in practice, One of the things, if you watched an NFL practice, and Neil, you can affirm this. One of the things you constantly hear coaches say is, "Stay up, stay up,
don't
stay
go
up,
to
stay
the
on,
ground.
Yeah,
you get
stay
told
on
off.
Your feet. Yeah. If you go to the ground, you're not going to be around very long, because when you go to the ground, that's when guys get their legs twisted up and all kinds of bad things happen. So, in a typical NFL practice, even in pads, they never take a guy to the ground. Mm. You do what we call butt up, and you'll strike him, wrap him up, but then you let him go. Now, you even lose the ability to butt up in practice as the season gets on. And with these new rules, which I think are good and they do protect the players, you just have to live with the fact that you have to coach tackling in a different way. And it's all about approach and body position, not about the finish. And that you hope that the finish is, you know, going to happen on game day.
This question is from Abby Shepherd, who says, why is there all the talk of a team in London and not Hawaii? Hawaii has hosted the Pro Bowl. Would London ever host the Pro Bowl? So, I mean, Jeff, I've never lived in Hawaii. You have.
I'm all with Abby. I don't understand this.
Yeah. But, I mean, London is a, you know, is a obviously a vibrant market. There's a good sort of TV packages here that are available to the NFL. Clearly, they've sold out. What would it be like in Hawaii? Would it be difficult?
I think it would be a sell because, you know, football is, you know, a big part of the culture in Hawaii.
Yeah.
In a way, I hope that it never happens because the University of Hawaii is held a really dear spot in my heart. Mm. And, you know, I think it would take away from their game, take away from the college game. I'll tell you one of the reasons why the Pro Bowl's in Hawaii is to get the players, to entice the players to play in the game.
That's why the Pro Bowl will not be in London in February.
Well, and it's not going to be in Detroit. And it's not. But, you know, and that's because they make that a worthwhile trip for those players to take their families. Typically, their coaches come out. And so that it becomes kind of a holiday and then a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily the game is, you know, last year we covered the game. Yeah. It was actually a pretty good game.
Decent game. Yeah, they played.
But the reason that the Pro Bowl is in Hawaii is the fact that it entices the players to come and spend a week in the islands and actually participate in the game. And even at that, some of them choose to not play. Yeah.
Two more questions to finish us off then, and they're relating to the running back position. The first one from Ray Alger, who says, why has the running back position become so devalued? The teams that do well, Green Bay, Seattle, San Francisco, still have good ground games. And I think, Jeff, from a coaching point of view, the running game is still really important, isn't it? Is this more about individual running backs? You feel like you can, like the Rams have plugged in sort of, well, look at CJ Anderson's undrafted for the Denver Broncos. Is it more that you can plug somebody in? It's not that we don't believe the running game is important, is it?
No, I don't. It's not a de-emphasis of the running game, even though teams are throwing the football more than they ever have. You still have to run the football. That's just part of football, and it'll always be part of football. But it's exactly as you say, Neil. The fact of the matter is there are the pool of running backs is much deeper than the pool of quarterbacks or even wide receivers. Yeah. So you can shake the bushes and a bunch of running backs will fall out, but you're not going to find many quarterbacks in there.
And this question relates to that a little bit. It's our final question from Daniel Gilmartin, who says, given the emphasis on the passing game, do you think we'll see a lack of future Hall of Fame running backs?
No, because I think there's enough of them now that are playing at such a high level that, you know, their body of work over their careers, you know, warrant Hall of Fame.
What about in the future, though? I mean, do you think we'll see franchise backs or not?
It's all kind of changed because, you know, we used to talk about 1,000 yards being the benchmark of a back. Now you're playing 18 or 16 games. 1,000 yards, really, what is that, 60 yards a game the guy has to average?
Yeah.
So I think that the great ones will always be there. I just, you know, what I think it will eliminate is the guy who maybe got there because everybody ran the football so many times. But the great ones will still find their way to the Hall.
Just to finish us off, Jeff, they always talk about these things going in cycles. So in the 70s, it was 3 yards and a cloud of dust. Now here we are with, passing the football at an amazing rate. And so then you spread everyone out and then do you go back to running the football? Do you think it will ever go back to that 3 yards in a cloud of dust or is it changed forever?
No, I don't think it's changed forever, although the rules have made it, you know, more enticing to quarterbacks and coaches and coordinators to throw the football more. Yeah. But I think one of the things that's changed is you don't have, quote, the feature back like you used to, where you had, Walter Payton.
Yep.
You had, you know, those guys that Emmitt Smith, that they were going to get every carry. Mm. Now it's done more by committee, and that's probably elongated some careers because they don't take as many hits. But can you imagine what LeSean McCoy would do if you gave him 35 carries a game in the I formation like you used to with Walter Payton? I mean, think about the numbers that guy could have. So that's why I say the great ones will always be great ones. Yeah. But, you know, the measuring stick changes as the game changes.
All right, we are out of time, Jeff.
It's been awesome, man. It's so good to be back.
It's great to see you. There you are, right there. So this has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. And this has been a USP content production. Jeff, I'll see you Sunday.
See you on Sky on Sunday.
We'll see you there. Me and Jeff will be there Sunday night. Make sure you join us. Until next week, it's bye for now. Bye-bye.